Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
G'day, welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, your weekly pod to help you save and make more money. My name is Michelle Baltazar, and I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. When it comes to books about property investing, there are 1,001 choices out there in the market. But this week, I'd like to draw your attention to a new book released just this week titled Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future. The reason I recommend it highly is because it's packed with real-life case studies that show how ordinary people have built their property portfolios, ranging in total value of maybe just over $1 million. So that's pretty realistic, to a few million dollars. These are investors who did not come from a wealthy family, I know there are stereotypes out there, or have worked in the finance industry. In short, they are living proof that with the right education around property investing, anyone can achieve building their wealth through property, no matter how high property prices seem to keep going up and up and up, or how interest rates keep changing, or even how your own personal circumstances can often change drastically and you feel like there is just never the right time to invest. Joining us today is the author of this new book. His name is John Pidgeon, and he does have some idea on how to invest in property, having been an investor himself and a property coach for over 25 years. He is also the host of This Is Money and This Is Property. John, thank you for joining us.
Lovely to be on, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
No dramas. Now, by the end of this episode, I'd like to think that we should be able to give everyone listening in today at least maybe five ways to get into the property market through tools and strategies that are probably not often talked about. We want to know, John, here's a challenge for you, how to invest in property right now. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Well, first off, what's great about your book is that you have included case studies of property investors from all walks of life, like the guy who had a few properties in just one suburb in Queensland, or the couple with just two properties so far. But I mean, tell us, why did you feel like this kind of book is needed right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if we strip it back, you mentioned there's hundreds and hundreds of property books out there and general wealth creation books. And I think every book's got their own story. And I think mine's no different to that. When I was growing up, when I was starting to invest, I was just absorbing every book I could, regardless of its title and its length. And I'd always draw one or two things from it. And I suppose this is unique because it's my experience over 25 years of investing, and so it can't be replicated, I suppose. But I just really wanted to give an insight. If I was starting investing again at 21, what is important to me to kick things off, and how do I go about it? So I'm minimizing the mistakes that investors often make.
And again, I'd just like to mention that in your book, there is a section where you've asked your clients or maybe other property investors, what did you do wrong when you first started? And even I myself learned a couple of things or two from that. And I'm like, yes, I should have done that. Now, property prices just seem so out of reach at the moment. But given your background, we talked about this, is there a perfect time?
I don't think there is. The time is when you're ready, and that's probably the biggest misconception. Is a lot of investors try to time the market, but I say to my clients, you're ready when the banks can lend you money and you've got a deposit ready to go, and your mindset or your risk profile says, yeah, I want to invest in real estate for the next time or for the first time. And I think generally speaking, most investors will invest for the long term. So whether they're buying in a hot market now or a cold market is relevant right now. But over the long term, it will level out because generally good property consistently performs. But I would say that there are different markets within markets right now. So you can go to somewhere like Perth or even Adelaide and the markets are red hot right now. So do we avoid those markets because we're competing against 50 other people wanting to buy that same property? maybe we do. We go somewhere else where we can maybe pay what we think it's worth, not anymore, or even get a discount in a good market that has performed consistently over time.
I like that. But it does mean, though, that you really need to do your homework. Going through the book, there were a lot of calculations, I'm not going to lie. And ironically, for someone who works in a finance magazine, I myself don't like calculating stuff. Like, I wish I can just press a button and it just like goes through everything that I need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a numbers game. And thankfully, my maths has always been relatively good, but technology allows us to make it even more sharper these days. But once you know those numbers, I think it puts you in good stead to be educated to make the right decision. And a lot of people fall over at the 11th hour. They lose confidence or they doubt themselves because they haven't understood the numbers of what the property is actually going to do for them for now and for later. So I think the numbers are extremely important, Michelle.
All right, then one last question before we get straight into the five tools or five tips is there's always this discussion in the press that, of course, the baby boomers could afford buying property because it was like $100,000 or so, but now it's different for the Gen Z and the Gen Yers and the millennials. Has anything changed between how you would have invested in property 20 years ago to what's really changed today with the property prices just really too high compared to the rate that wages have gone up?
Yeah, the one thing that has changed is the property prices, isn't it? They're extremely high and it's a lot harder to save for a deposit. But when I think back to when I was buying my first few properties, it felt no different. I was still working hard to save for a deposit. I was still having to monitor what I spent each month to make sure that I created that deposit in the time frame that I'd set out. So wage growth definitely hasn't kept up. There's no doubt about that. But it just means the landscape changes. And I think what's happening in maybe Sydney and Melbourne is the next generation coming through, there's a very strong chance that if they want to live in the suburbs that they've grown up in, they will either have to rent there or rely on mum or dad or previous generations' money to get there because the prices are just too far out of reach. So the only other option from that is to actually move into a different location or that rent vesting model that we talk about in the book.
Rent vesting, yes. There's definitely rent vesting and also free vesting. Which,
yes.
not to my advantage, but it's pretty fantastic for the young up and coming property investors right now to just kind of save up.
Free vesting for me, other than my three kids, I talk about it to everyone because it's just such a great way to fast track your savings to get into a market sooner. And we know what the difference is to get into a market 3 years sooner than what everyone else is. It's just compounding growth using the bank's money. So yeah, I can't speak highly enough of free vesting as long as parents can put up with it. I've seen people in their 20s save $300,000-$500,000 just by simply staying at home. They haven't got the rent costs, haven't got the overheads, insurances, those other things that do eat into your savings.
So just very quickly, for those who haven't come across the term free vesting, what is it in a nutshell?
It's essentially staying at home where you've grown up. I know it's the trend and it's cool and we want our independence to go out and rent on our own or rent with friends, but staying at home is arguably much cheaper. And it doesn't mean we take parents for granted and don't pay them anything. We have to obviously respect that and follow the rules, but it's a much cheaper alternative. So we stay there for 2-3 years or however it takes to be able to then have that deposit to go and buy their first property.
Right, right. All right. So five tools in 5 minutes. Are we ready?
Let's do it.
All right. So tell us, what are your five tools and strategies to invest in property right now?
I think whether you call them tools or key points, I think the first one is we need to know what we want in our own life. So many times we see people doing what someone else is doing, and it's not relative to us. Our cash flow position is different. Our goals are different. Our lifestyle is different. So we need to understand what we want in 10 to 15 years and then reverse engineer that to then make a step that says, yeah, I'm leaning towards that goal long term by buying this next property.
Makes sense. Number two.
So I think number two is knowing what your risk profile is. So a lot of people will go and buy where they're comfortable, right? Which is fantastic. It doesn't keep them up at night. So you've got to ask the question, what am I prepared to do? What am I prepared to spend? And which locations am I prepared to spend it in? We know a lot of investors will stay in their own location or their own town or even state. Is that going to impact their long-term wealth because they've stunted themselves to a particular location? So if your risk profile is not quite where it is and you're risk adverse, we need to increase our education and knowledge around the different property markets.
Speaking of which, we've had a reader ask us, Michelle, I have been pre-approved for $700,000, but the property that I really want is around the 1.2 to 1.5 million mark. How do I get there?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's quite a gap between those two figures, isn't there? So it's really banks base that on your servicing, which is essentially your income in your life versus your expenses. So if you've got credit card debt, if you've got personal loans, if you've got HEX debt, if you've our HELPS debt, you've got to get rid of all that stuff to increase your servicing. You need to increase your wage or your income on an annual basis to make it more appealing to the banks. Or there may be some assets that we just need to get rid of to increase that servicing. So I would be saying to a mortgage broker, what do I need to do to get my borrowing capacity to 1.1? Because saving that large chunk of money might be another 10 years away.
Yes, and that is a reality for a lot of people, not because of their own fault. They're probably getting the promotion. They don't have credit card debt. They're good with money, but it truly is just the gap between property prices and serviceability. So there is a good section in your book about the stepping stones home versus your forever home. Can you do that? So you buy a $700,000 home, and that's just not your forever home. That's just not the place you're going to live in.
It's probably one of the most common questions I get from people is, what's the next step for me and how can I bridge that gap? Because you're right, it may go from 700 to the upsizer, which is 1.5, for example. So it's really a case of getting growth in the existing property and cash savings on the side in order to bridge that gap. Because generally what happens, the problem with upsizing is generally the area that we want to go into or the dwelling type that we want to live in is going to be superior than the one we're in now. So usually the growth on that particular asset's greater than the one we're in. We're playing catch up. So how do we bridge that gap? Well, we can go and buy more assets that are going to perform in a combined effort to bridge the gap, or we save more funds to put in a higher deposit whilst we're paying down the loan of that first property. I will add to that is a lot of people want to keep that first property as well as buy that second property. We've got to understand which way we're going to go with that, because if we're going to buy that second property as well as keep the first property, there's not as much desire to pay down the mortgage on that first property and more desire to keep our powder dry and keep that keep those cash savings sitting in an offset account ready to use for that second purchase.
All right. So tip number three.
Tip number three is find a really good, strong team of people and have them in your corner for years to come. And that may mean trading one for the other if someone's not doing what they need for you. So when we talk about team of people, we're talking about a sophisticated mortgage broker that's been there and done that. So an investor themselves that deals with investors all the time. We're talking about a strategic accountant that can maximize in that space for you. We're talking about a good solicitor or conveyancer and lawyer to have your insurances and wills and estate in order so that we're always protecting the downside and creating a good solid foundation for the future. So they're just examples of good people that you have in your corner. When we're acquiring property, we might engage a really good buyer's agent that specializes in investments and looks at multiple property locations around the country. If you're not looking at 15, 20 different locations around the country for your clients as an investor, you're probably not broad enough to get maximum results.
Now, I reckon it is so hard to build a team because it's not like, say, for example, for me, my network are people in my industry. So I don't know if a conveyancer is good or not, or if a mortgage broker is good or not. It truly is just word of mouth, right? The first person that you come across almost. Is there a way to figure it out? And I'm going to throw in a question there. How do you fire your mortgage broker if they're not doing the right thing?
Yeah, look, it's a tough conversation. Don't worry about that. But I think you're understanding who you've got in your corner by asking good questions of them. And the only way you can ask good questions is my fourth tip, which is actually educating and creating and gaining a greater knowledge in the area that you want to be an expert in. So I think too many investors try to outsource everything and presume that their accountant's doing a good job for them, presume that their mortgage broker's getting the best loan for them without actually asking good questions. So I think over the journey, if you're educating yourself and gaining more knowledge year in, year out, and podcasts like these give you a great platform to start with, you've got the ability to ask strategic questions. If they don't answer them in the way that you're comfortable and you don't get that gut feel about your professional, then it's time to upgrade.
Easier said than done. I, like you said, we trust that if you're an accountant, you know all the rules, you know the changes in the legislation where you could maximize your deductions, for example. So tip number four is education. What's your last but not least tool or point?
Yeah, so the last one is look at, and everyone goes as their first part of finding real estate, or saying, wake up tomorrow and say, I want to go and buy a property. The first step usually for most uneducated is jump straight onto realestate.com or domain. And that's just a fact because it's exciting. I can see what I've got there and like, oh, this looks nice and it's got a pool and all these lovely things. But they haven't got a borrowing capacity. They don't know what their long-term strategy is. If it's an investment, they don't know what yield or cash flow they need. They've got no rhyme or reason as to why they should buy in this particular location for this particular asset type. So you've really, that's almost the last piece of the puzzle. You've got to understand, I talk about in the book, an 8-point strategy, which talks about the overall strategy, the long-term outcome. It talks about the price point and the max price that they are going to buy in at. It talks about the yield that they need or the cash flow from that particular property that's not going to bust them. It talks about the type of property and over the last 20 years, for example, which types of property have performed better than others. And a lot of the research will give you that knowledge to then design that strategy to then say, okay, these are locations that we've now shortlisted. Now we jump on realestate.com or domain, not right at the start 1 month ago when we just start in Broome and end up in Bendigo.
Guilty as charged, mate. That's what I do. I look at domain. I look at what's got a courtyard, what has a study. So all these five tips, whether it's education, knowing what you want, knowing your risk profile, what you can afford, the sleep at night factor, that is almost for the long term. And if you're saying property right now, surely we can give some practical tips as well. And for example, not a lot of people know what a guarantor is. And I think that is a really good way to say, I don't have the deposit, but my mom and dad, they've got a bit of equity here and I can do that right now.
Yeah, it's the 10th wonder of the world, isn't it? Behind equity and free vesting.
The bank of mom and dad.
Yeah, that's right. Look, it's parents have got to be on board with it. And the biggest obstacle I find is that the parents don't know what they're up for. So it's like sitting down and almost presenting a business plan to them and saying, look, okay, parents, this is what I'm looking at. This is my cash flow in my life. This is how much I'm saving per month. I'm looking at a property for 500K. This is the deposit I've got. I'm coming to you to ask for a parental guarantor. This is how a parental guarantor works. This is this is what I want over the next 10 years in my life. It's like pitching it to them as a business plan to know that mum and dad can say, okay, yeah, now I know what it is and I'm safe and I've got some trust in the fact that you have your savings or your ducks in a row so that, because at the end of the day, the parents are the ones at risk, not the one receiving the parental guarantor. But it's an unbelievable leg up to get into the market maybe sooner because you've got less deposit. And when the cost of living has risen so fast, the parental guarantor is a better option to get into the market sooner, which in turn gives you a better chance of getting some growth in that particular asset.
And I know that you have your own property coaching business. Do you find that your clients have been doing that lately, or what's been the most popular strategy?
Yeah, a lot of first home buyers are taking advantage of a number of concessions out there, the stamp duty maybe, or the first home super saver scheme, or the parental guarantor. So it's definitely more common. None of those things were around when I first started investing. We did it the hard way.
Right. But you had to stump up the money straight up.
Yeah, correct. I was 1 year away before the stamp duty concessions came in. So anyway, missed that boat. But I think that we've got to entertain all of those first. Some of them mightn't apply. Like, for example, in Victoria, stamp duty concession for first-time buyers is like, I don't know, $600 or $650. You can't buy anything in Melbourne for that price or very little.
Correct.
So we don't just go and buy something to take advantage of the government grants or concessions, but we entertain it at the start and then we make a decision from there.
And finally, the one on interest only versus principal and interest only, because I've been brought up thinking pay principal and interest all the time. You just want to get that principal payments down. But in fact, interest only is a good consideration for investment properties.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, Michelle, isn't it? Like, I just finished interviewing an investor from the States, and they have 30-year fixed loans at whatever the current rate is, which is outstanding. They don't want to pay it down. There's no incentive to. We in Australia have commonly 3 to 5 year interest only loans.
Yes.
So I think it's a great way for investors to be able to continue to move forward, knowing that the running cost of that property each month is going to be less because they're only paying the interest. Now, they're not paying down any of the principal, but if we're buying well, we're capturing some of the growth and our cash flow is manageable so that we maybe don't have to sell that property because the running costs are too high. If it's our owner-occupier, 99% of the time, we want to be paying principal and interest. We want to be paying down that debt, which is considered bad debt by the banks. The income-producing asset on our investment property makes it good debt, right? So understanding the difference between good debt and bad debt, which I talk about in the book, is ultra important.
All right. This one is a new thing, and I found it refreshing to see that in your book, where you have a section where you ask your clients, what are your habits that support your goals? I think this is important. You want to develop habits or perhaps get rid of bad habits.
Yeah, I'm really passionate about this, in particular the habits. Like, everyone wakes up January 1, sets the New Year's resolution and says, this is my goal for the year. A lot of people, unfortunately, don't get to achieve those goals. And I think the missing piece of the puzzle is the habits. If I want to run a marathon in 6 months' time, that's great to write it on paper and tell everyone about it that I'm going to run it. But if I don't have the habits of sleep well each night, train 4 or 5 times a week, do some varied training and actually plan it out for the week and hit those habits each day, each week, each month, I'm not going to reach that marathon. Conversely, we look at it the other way and say, if we do those things and we consistently get our sleep, our nutrition is good, our training is consistent, we don't even have to worry about the goal. It's going to be achieved automatically because I know I've done the work. So habits, in my mind, are much more important than the goal, but we've got to set the goal first.
I like that. And you are a living example of that. For those who have not heard of John before, or you haven't listened to his podcast, I know that you're also a sports fanatic. You have a life work balance. You prioritize your family. You live in his beautiful house away from the city, if you like, and running a successful property business. So once again, I want to keep talking. This is my jam, talking about property as well, but we've run out of time. So I just want to thank you for your time and sharing your tips so generously with us, John.
Pleasure, Michelle. Thanks for having me on. I could talk all day with you about property as well.
Right. Before we go, don't forget that if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us out by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions or even topics you'd love for us to cover through our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. Now, John has been very generous. We've got 5 books to give away. His new book, Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future, out now. So there you have it. Listen to John. He's got his own podcast. I enjoyed listening to it. Plenty to talk about. And I wish you all the best in your own property investing journey. That's it for this episode. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.